It is time for Matt Chat, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I have a very, very fun guest today. I'm so excited to talk to the OG Survivor fan, at least, well, one of the OG Survivor fans in my eyes, and that is Eric from Micronesia and Karamoan. And Eric, thank you so much for joining us and for talking about Survivor. How you doing?
I'm good. And I said this right before we started the live chat, that it's nice to finally like meet you and like be able to talk back to you. Because I've seen your star has like risen like so astronomically fast. Like I just started on TikTok. Like I had a TikTok like years ago and I was like, TikTok's dumb. And I didn't do it. And then I started doing TikTok again like this year. And you started to appear everywhere there and Instagram and like everywhere. So, and then I saw you met Jeff Probst, which was like, that's awesome. Like that's like the pinnacle. Like you can meet a lot of survivors, but it's tough sometimes to meet like Jeff Probst.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, when Ryan and I saw Jeff, we literally quoted you. We were like, that's Jeff Probst there, that he's right there. Like it was crazy. Yeah, the whole thing was crazy. And this year has been very crazy for me. Like I've been posting, I think for 4 or 5 years. And this year it's definitely been this calendar year has been one of the biggest for me. So I love doing it. Yeah. I love talking about Survivor and I'm so excited to talk Survivor with you. And I know you've been a fan, you've been watching since season one, correct? Or very early on?
Yes.
So how do you feel like season 50 like lines up to you like overall to like, you know, just in Survivor in general, like how are you feeling about it? And do you feel like it's meeting your expectations?
So it's like this season is like it's clearly new era. Like there's no mistaking the season. If you watched it after you watched, you know, Borneo or even All Stars or some of those very early seasons, you'd still be like, this is very different. You know, this is new era. Clearly, it has like flavoring of like original Survivor, but I think that comes in more with the cast, like who they chose. You know, with like Kobe in there. The twists are crazy. Like there's tons of them. And then these celebrity things are completely new. Like that's almost like the newest of the new thing, I would say, that separates Survivor 50 from new era. It's like, there's like kind of like, it's kind of like you have way back in the day, old school Survivor. Then there's kind of this golden era of Survivor where they kind of hit their stride. And then there's new era kind of, there's a place in between there, but then there's new era. And now you're kind of this new evolution with this celebrity thing coming in. I would say that's my assessment.
I think I find it so weird that Survivor likes to try out really big things on seasons with returning players, like a big cast.
Yeah.
So for example, like the fire tokens, trying that out on Winners at War is like a crazy gamble to me. I will say there is some like, you're almost guaranteed people are going to watch these seasons because of the names, because of the characters. And so maybe that's when you try out a twist because you're like, well, people are going to watch no matter what. So maybe try out the twist. I don't think we're ever going to see celebrity cameos again in the future just because of the way people are reacting. I mean, that Zac Brown episode was, I've never felt so much vitriolic hate towards an episode online than to the Zac Brown episode, which is crazy because it was the episode Mike White left and it was actually a crazy move. It was a 3-2-1 vote and everyone's like, Zac Brown.
Yeah.
So I just don't think that we'll see it again in the future. Do you think that like, you know, I mean, we're talking about, there was a celebrity in the episode that we're talking about. So Jimmy Fallon, the Jimmy Fallon twist.
Right.
What did you think about this twist overall? And did you think, like, do you think we'll ever see something like this again?
I'm torn. So the celebrity thing, we don't know their internal numbers. They're doing marketing and research and all that kind of jazz. They may have seen actually really good engagement outside of the core, you know, people that watch Survivor. And they might be like, this is a great idea. Like, we brought in people that don't even care about Survivor. So they may be like, this is a great thing. You know, they don't, you know, they're not looking just at the fan base. They're looking at like people they can eat to increase their fan base. So it's very possible celebrity, this is just a toe in the water and they continue to do this. And Jeff, you know, we know Jeff kind of has, this is kind of his thing, I want to say. I think it's fair to say that this is a Jeff thing with the celebrities. Jimmy Fallon, so specifically this Jimmy Fallon thing, the only reason I think it got such blowback was because the punishment was too harsh for losing.
Yeah. Yeah, the punishment was bad. Daryl says Christian having to tell people he has a vote for himself is the only thing I didn't like about the twist.
Right.
Like that is, I actually have been thinking a lot about this because in my like first initial reaction, I was like, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. There are twists that I hate. And there are twists that I really loved. Like I really liked the double duo twist where they're tied to somebody. I thought that worked out really, really well. But this, I was like, I don't hate the one in the urn. I think is actually a pretty interesting advantage because I like advantages that are not like overpowered, right?
Yeah.
One in the urn is interesting because the vote is in fact, like you can't talk to your alliance about it. This is before all of the discussions happen. Things can change and things have changed before, you know, before going to tribal council. And so, you know, you put one in the urn for somebody that you think could be in trouble and then all of a sudden it switches and now there's a random vote in the urn. I think that's a very interesting advantage that I wouldn't hate to see again by itself. I also, people, I might get roasted for this. I also don't hate the idea of somebody voting for themselves. I think it's kind of a gut punch of like, it's like almost like a cruel and unusual punishment here. But as long as you can do it in secret, I don't hate it.
Right.
The fact that he had to, number one, was not able to read the note ahead of time.
Right.
Had to read it for the first time in front of everybody and everybody, there's no lying. The point of Survivor is being able to like maneuver and figure out what you can do with information. Knowledge is power. And when you give that knowledge away, well, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So I think like combined, I don't love it, but separately, I'm kind of a fan.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fine. Telling people, forcing him to open the envelope in front of everybody was pretty awful. That's, I mean, I think anybody with any position in the tribe, you know, let's say somebody really secure did that. Like, I don't know, Suri or Rizzo went and did the challenge and they had to read it out. It basically puts on blast everybody like, oh, this is your opportunity to blindside this person because everybody has on their mind, like this person already has a vote against them. So I think the punishment is a little severe given that he had to read it out. So I guess it was a tweak and they need to tweak it. It's kind of like the hidden immunity idols, you know, were too powerful when they first showed up versus they made it so you have to read them right before the votes are read.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I really think that the tweak there is the most important. And somebody commented on one of my videos and I hadn't thought about this and I would love to get your thoughts on this. It looked like everyone was like, oh, and I said this, you know, Christian had a choice. He didn't have to go on the journey. You know, he put himself in that situation. Even Emily said that. But, you know, somebody pointed this out. It looked like it was the illusion of choice. But if somebody else had won that immunity challenge, they could have chosen anybody to go onto this barge and to do this thing, which then also makes me like the twist less because I liked that. Hey, Christian put himself into it. Christian put himself out there. But the fact that if like, Suri had like won immunity for the first time ever, if she could have chosen anybody, she would be the one choosing. And who could have done that puzzle? Not many people.
Right. Right.
Had you thought about that? That, you know, it looked like it had the illusion of a choice, but Joe really had the power there and he just gave the power over to the players.
He did. I'm not a fan of that whole, like, you know, pick it amongst yourselves or do rock, paper, scissors. Like it's too much chance in that way. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of seasons where people just fight about that stuff and they don't really show that. Or someone just literally is like, I pick that person. That's the person that's going. And that's how you're supposed to do it. And I've been on the wrong end of this before. You know, I picked, what was it? I picked like Parvati to go to exile and it screwed me over in the end. Like it was a terrible choice, but that was kind of like a group consensus. Like everybody's like, send her. And I didn't make the choice. I didn't have agency in that. That puzzle, I've wondered too, if it was like destined to fail because everybody said it's really tough. It seemed really, really tough. Even though it was very similar to what Rachel, you know, what Rachel did on the barge, I believe, in terms of the, you have to time limit going or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. The editing doesn't help here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also it's interesting because I think so with the puzzle, it looks like a simple enough puzzle. It's a logo puzzle. But I think with the timing of it, like it's not just an hourglass, you know, you can hear it. And I think there's a psychological component to that. And I think Rachel has talked about it where you can hear when you can hear it going down. And I think they time it out where the ropes are a minute each. So I think he had 7 minutes to do the puzzle. Somebody's saying maybe it was 5 minutes, but I think they time it to every single time the weight drops, it's a minute or something like that. But so, you know, when you hear that, your body goes into like a panic mode. And I really, and I'm not saying that Christian is the best at puzzles ever. Like, I think that Camilla probably is better at puzzles than Christian. Just Christian's really good at slide puzzles. Yeah. But like, if you think about who is on this season, genuinely, who could have done this puzzle faster than Christian? I do not think anybody else left in the season. Is Emily good at puzzles? Like, I don't think she's like particularly great. Like, I mean, feel like nobody could have gotten this.
If you want to, I mean, I have wondered this from, and I agree with, I can see the comments here. You know, it felt like Christian had 5 minutes to do the puzzle. Christian said he felt like he had 5 minutes to do the puzzle. And then someone else said under that, I think they wanted that note read at camp. So anyone that did it would fail. Otherwise the celebrity name drop would flop. So yeah, like maybe they wanted it. Like if I put on my conspiracy tinfoil hat, whoever did this was destined to fail. I mean, that said, it was something funky about it. Like the editing felt weird. Like I would expect Christian to solve a Survivor 50 logo as a puzzle in some amount of time. So the question is, was the time like really quick? Like, was it made a lot quicker to go? Was the psychological effect just that detrimental to Christian specifically? The deep conspiracy in me is like, Jeff was friends with Mike White, and White Lotus is a fantastic, like, outside of Survivor tie-in to Survivor for like onboarding people into Survivor who maybe watch White Lotus or have never heard of Survivor or don't care about Survivor. And when Mike White was targeted early by Christian, he was like, we're going to get this guy out. We're going to screw him over the first chance we get with something like, I mean, did that happen? I don't know. Like, I don't think so. It's kind of out there. Like, that's why I say tinfoil hat for that.
Yeah, I think that that's so funny. I think that there's a lot to think about here. And the other thing I think about that actually just came to me that I've never thought about when it comes to this particular thing is I feel like it's a really interesting choice that it's on a barge and it's not on the aisle. Like, I do think that there is something about the movement of the ocean. You're not on your like normal ground. If you don't have your sea legs, like what if you get like a little like motion sickness? Like you were just on a boat and then you're on a moving barge. Like maybe there's something to that too. And I've never really thought about that particularly because I think that there's, I don't know. I think it's interesting. And I think I wouldn't hate to see it again. And we've seen it once work, like Rachel got the thing and it was a different advantage, obviously, but this time it didn't work. The person didn't get it. I don't know if you heard this. I was listening to somebody on TikTok posted this. They paused it when you could see the note and it wasn't read, but apparently there was another benefit to this. So you bank and earn and or you bank a vote, pardon me, earn a vote, whatever it is. bank and earn. No. You earn a vote. And you put that in there and then you can decide whether or not you still want to vote at that tribal council. If you don't want to actually use your vote at that tribal council, you already have a vote in the urn. So you don't have to vote like it's already in there, but then you can keep that parchment and use it as an extra vote later down the line, which I think is an interesting additional benefit that we did not know about prior like in the episode. It wasn't told to us in the episode. I think it does make the positives a little bit more positive.
It does. That's very strange. And I think maybe that was taken out for not a nefarious reason. I mean, it's just additional. He lost, so the storytelling doesn't need to go that deep, but that's still pretty interesting.
Yeah. Do you think that like, do you think an extra vote can be useful at this point of the game? I think we're got 9 people left in the game, 10 people left in the game. Do you think it can be useful?
1,000%, just because statistically it becomes more powerful as time goes on. And I think Marianne talked about this on her season, where she said, essentially, I'm not going to use any extra vote now when there's, I think it was like 10 people versus there's like three or four people left. Like, it's so much more powerful. So absolutely.
Yeah. I think that this could have been really interesting. Now, here's a question. Do you think that Christian was destined to be voted out here no matter what? Or do you think the fact that he already had a vote for him in the urn that everybody knew about really was what sealed the deal for him? Or do you think they could have turned it onto Ozzy? Or do you think they could have turned it onto Emily?
It's a huge hypothetical. So I'm going to say it was not destined. I was actually thinking, you know, Rick, everybody thought Rick had an idol, you know, Rick could easily say, I'm going to potentially play this on Christian if everybody's turning on him on tribal. So then you don't know, Devins or Christians, F that. We're going to vote for Emily. She's safe. You know, he's not going to protect Emily. So, you know, it could have gone any way. There's so many variables there, but his connection, I think, with Devins would have been an asset in a situation like that.
I think that's a really good point. I think that, you know, people having an idol, I think, is so powerful. And I think, you know, you bring up idols, and this is something that I think is really interesting. Really, up until this point, we have not heard much about Rizzo and Ozzy's boomerang idols still in their possession.
Yeah.
They still have these idols. Now, the rule of this idol is they can only play it on themselves. Do you think that people are actively thinking about these idols? I mean, the only people that we heard bring up these idols were Emily and Christian because they were worried about Ozzy with this idol. Right. Do you think anybody else is really thinking about Rizzo's idol or Ozzy's idol here? And is this a factor, or because it's not a full idol and they can only play it for themselves, does that really kind of take away some of the idol's power and some of that scariness that goes along with it as well?
Those conversations must be happening, and they're not making it to our eyes, you know, because they're edited out, because they don't come to fruition. You know, that's my only thing. You know, it's kind of like, and I spoke about this on another podcast, like I think on Sunday, about how it's kind of like a multiverse. Like, there's all these possibilities of what could and could not happen, but, you know, they snip off the branches that we don't ever see, and they don't exist at that point, even though those events all did happen and those conversations did happen. So yeah, for sure, I think people are plotting against Rizzo and Ozzy. I do think that there's this insane thing happening where Ceri has so much plot armor, because everybody feels like they are in the plot with Ceri together, being like, oh my God, I'm making it so far, and Ceri's my best friend. And Ceri's connected to Ozzy and Rizzo, that there's kind of this tertiary, like, don't mess with them because Ceri's on good terms with them, which they don't know how good of terms she is on with them, but they know that she's friendly with them and don't mess with them, you know? So yeah. I do think that Ceri's actually the influence here around those idols, not like coming more into conversation or coming to any fruition.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation and a really good point. When I was watching the episode, we have some friends that come over when we watch the episodes, if we're in town. And when Christian brought up Ozzy's name to Ceri, we all went, yep. Oh no, that's not good. That's not good. And then later, Emily did the same thing. Emily also brought up Ozzy's name to Ceri. And I think that this is this fascinating thing where Ceri has this power of thinking that, hey, I'm actually Ceri's number one. Everybody thinks that they are Ceri's number one, but it's really me. It's really me. I mean, you've played with Ceri. What is it? Is it just because she's just like nice, or does she have this kind of like other like worldly ability to make people really feel like, hey, you're locked in with me?
She's super nice. She is a very awesome, wonderful, nice person, 1,000%. She has this compartmentalization of, there's this vicious strategist inside her that is not present when you are with her. You get the warm, glowing, wonderful person that she is, but there's this other computer going on in her, this essence in her, I guess I would say, not a computer, because I don't think she has no coldness to her. She's not a game bot, like we have seen a lot of contestants on Survivor be. She's incredibly personable and social. I would play today with Ceri and trust her, even though I know logically, like, at some point she will cut you when it is necessary to do. Ozzy's in a fantastic position, I think, because he is not on her threat radar at all. Like socially, strategically, like, I guess not socially, but more strategically, Ozzy is not a threat to her in any way. So he's an asset. Rizzo, she doesn't, I'm very confused about her relationship with Rizzo because Rizzo is a shark. You know, he is in the same league as Ceree. So maybe there's just a, like a difference of age that there's a relationship there of like mentor and mentee that's kind of going on, like that's bonding them. But whatever it is, it's purely social because strategically, I think they're of the same, you know, they're of the same kind.
I think that Rizzo and Ceree is one of the most fascinating duos that we've seen come out of Survivor 50. And this is kind of one of the reasons why I love returning player seasons like this, because we see people who would have never worked together or would have like, in what world would we see Ceree and Rizgod like on the same season? It's crazy. And so the fact that they are working together this closely, like Ceree, whenever she gets any information, she runs and tells Rizzo. When Rizzo gets information, he runs and tells Ceree. Like, it is wild. I think that Ceree, this is my, I don't know. I think Ceree sees a lot of herself in Rizzo. Because I think, you know, we hear time and time again, and I've said this on a couple of different podcasts, but time and time again, you hear people say, I don't like Rizzo. And even in real life, I'll be talking to Survivor fans and they go, oh God, Rizzo rubbed me the wrong way, but I don't know. He's growing on me. Every single person says that about Rizzo. And I think that Ceree doesn't really have the like, oh, I didn't really like Ceree, but now she's growing on me. But people have this kinship, have this connection to Rizzo. And I feel like they have the same thing with Ceree. And I think that Ceree sees that. And she's like, man, I didn't think that the person, my prodigy, would be a 25-year-old New Yorker, you know, that like calls himself Rizgod. But here we are. I almost think they're like two sides of the same coin. Like they're so similar, but so different.
Yes. I think 1,000% I agree with you. Ceree is like, you get with her and you're with her. Like there's no ever like, she's just a nice person. She's a good, nice person. Like go run with Ceree. Rizzo, it does seem, oh my God, what is up with this kid? And then he grows on you and then he's there, you know, he's ingrained. Is that like a Gen Z thing? Like, is it because he uses the term Riz or whatever? Like what, like why? Like I had the same exact reaction to Rizzo. I was like, this guy's annoying. Like, I can't stand this guy. And then by episode 2 or 3, I was like, I'm with this guy. He's doing great. He's personable. He's charismatic. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to play with people, you know?
Yeah, this is an interesting comment that I think this is really, Rizzo is a salesman trained to persuade people, which is true. I think that salespeople are usually, you know, can be good at the show, but I think this is the key here. He also uses his childish innocence as a weapon. I think that there is something really important. I think the people that do the best on Survivor strategically are the most self-aware people. I think, and I said this about, I don't know if you watch The Traitors, but I also said this about Rob on The Traitors, not Rob Cisternino, Rob Roush on The Traitors. I think that you have to, in a game of social deception, you have to become very, very aware of what you give off to other people. And if you give off, hey, I'm a kid and I'm dumb and I'm silly and I'm goofy, you lean into that. You know, I think about like Fabio, right? On his season, he was like, yeah, people think I'm a dumb surfer, you know, whatever. And so that's what I'm going to be. I'll be whatever you need me to be. And I think that the people who lean into like, I'm just so dumb and so silly or whatever else, I think are the people that do so well on Survivor. And that's not just the self-awareness. It's also like, if you're self-aware of, you know, I can be really mean, you know, and so use that to your advantage, like being self-aware helps on Survivor. And I think that, you know, I think that he has amazing self-awareness. I mean, he's talked about in interviews that he has had to help, you know, support his family and like help his family and his brother and all of this stuff. And I think when you have to grow up at a younger age, in that kind of way, you learn how to best grow. And I think that self-awareness helps a lot. And I think that that's really what it is. He's like, hey, yeah, I'm just going to do nothing around camp and be weird and you'll probably end up liking me. And it's just amazing. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's hard to articulate it because a lot of the show and a lot of the fan base can be very numbers based, like who voted for who, what alliances with who. There's this social cohesion that is hard to, I guess, quantify. And it's kind of by example. Like you need to see examples of it.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, so I think it's funny, you know, there are times when somebody wins Survivor and you're like, ah, why didn't that person win? Whatever. Yeah. And I felt that way for season 43 with Gabler. I didn't understand why Gabler won.
Yeah.
And then I met him and I went, oh man, no, this guy, I get it. Like he has this aura, the way he talks to you, the way he like cares about what you're saying. Like he made me, I talked to him for maybe like 6 minutes and he made me laugh. And I was like, no, I would vote for him too. Like, I get it. Like he has, you know, he makes you feel a kind of way. And so, you know, I feel like a lot of times if people feel that one way about a player, usually it's right and positive or negative. But I think that, yeah, Rizzo's such an interesting case here. Now, do you think that this alliance, Rizzo, Suri, and Aussie, do you think it actually has like longevity in the game? Like, really? Do you think that they are going to be ride or dies? If they can go to final three together, they will? Or do you think that we will see somebody backstab somebody in the coming, you know, episodes?
If anybody does it, it'll be Rizzo. I actually do see Suri as a ride or die with Rizzo because I think she can beat Rizzo. And Ozzy's hanging on. Ozzy's in for the ride. You know, as far as Ozzy can go, he's going to go. So if I had to place money on it, I would. And I'm very bad at predictions, mainly because there's so many variables, to be honest.
So many variables.
I think Rizzo would be the one to be like, I can't hang on to Suri much longer because she's going to beat me. You know, she has friends with, she's friends with literally everybody on the beach. So at some point there is probably going to be an episode where Rizzo or someone else is like pushing at Rizzo. Like, you have to get Suri out because she will win.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there's kind of a double-edged sword because then Suri is on the jury and Suri will not like being on the jury if you send her there. So it's kind of like you have linked yourself to the ship wherever it sails.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I think it's going to be really, really interesting watching it play out. Because I do think there was a moment like back in episode, oh, I don't know, like 4 or 5 or whenever they kind of got onto the beach together when Rizzo or when Suri told Rizzo about the extra vote, there was something that Rizzo said in a confessional that I said, oh no, is he going to use this against Suri in a future episode? We haven't seen it happen yet. And I hope I'm wrong, but there was something there that I was like, oh no, don't use. Cause Suri has an extra. So every single person in this alliance does have something. Like Suri still has an extra boat.
Yeah.
That Ozzy gave to her. Ozzy has an idol. Rizzo has an idol. It's just fascinating.
Yeah. Someone in the chat said, Daryl said, Suri has no need to turn on Rizzo or Ozzy because she knows she can beat them. That's my opinion too.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's good. Do you think Suri can sit next to almost anybody and win?
Yeah, for sure. Everybody loves her and they trust her. It's insane. Mm-hmm. She literally has plot armor. Like, this is her game to lose at this point. The way she came back to the beach and everybody's like, oh, thank God Suri's here to help us figure out what to do. It's like, you guys, hello.
Yeah. That was wild. That was such a wild moment. And I was worried for Suri, but then I went, she's Suri. She'll figure her way out. she'll, and I bet you people didn't even notice it. Let's talk about that vote really quickly. So the Christian coach vote and the blowback from it. So we see Jonathan. Jonathan is a very interesting character to me this season.
Yeah.
Because I knew he was brought back because of his physical prowess and, you know, all that stuff. He said it's the first time he's ever been blindsided. First time he has ever, you know, not this time, but, you know, when it was, who was it? Colby or somebody. It's the first time he ever been blindsided.
Yes.
He has to figure out how to deal with that. And we're seeing him, you know, saying he has these like notches in his belt and he's like playing this game. Do you see that he has the control that he actually, do you think that he actually has the control that he think he has? Or do you think that is just the editing kind of making us think one way or the other? Like, how do you feel about Jonathan's game right now?
I'm with you on, I'm trying to figure out the edit of like, is he really on this path to victory and he does have this level of control, or is this someone who is not self-aware, who does think like, I'm in the driver's seat and I have been from the start, but like Suri's driving it and she doesn't even talk about that she's driving it. So it really depends on, we really don't know where Jonathan is until we have resolution. If he's in the finals, then yeah, he's right. He was slowly navigating the game and making these notches versus he is conflating his ego and he thinks he is the main character. when he is just a passenger. So I don't, we need resolution to know. I know that's going, and you can obviously, you've picked up on that too, and others have, but I'm very torn on, I have one of two things. Either he's actually a really dominant player that's really developed in this second run, or he's arrogant.
Yeah. It's going to be, it's fascinating because I think like he is playing and, you know, I don't love his style of gameplay. And so I feel like I can be kind of harsh on him, maybe too harsh. But I think that he's making some interesting like observations and moves, like the conversation between him and Aubrey, something that I would never expect. And I think Aubrey navigated that really, really well. She's like, I love working with people that people don't expect me to. And I don't want to go to the end with a bunch of nerds and whatever else. Do you think that like Aubrey and Jonathan actually are going to work together? Or do you think that this like conversation was like a facade? Because again, I could see it going both ways. Like, I don't really know that Aubrey necessarily wants to work with Jonathan, but if she has to, I think she will.
I think it was a she has to versus she wants to. I think that's what that was.
Yeah.
Jonathan, I don't like his gameplay either. And it's because he has these like bullying type of elements to it. And this kind of like, as soon as you start grouping people into like the middle, you know, like to their face in some cases, like the middle people, the bottom people, the top people, like it gets into this weird, like you're making judgments about people that seem to go outside the game. And it's really easy to be like, hey, it's just a game. I'm saying they're in the middle. Well, yeah, but people do have done that for thousands of years to validate all kinds of horrible things. So it kind of goes into a different realm.
I also think that whole conversation is fascinating because the people that I think in the middle, I just am like, no, they're on the other side.
Yeah.
Like they're actively, I mean, and maybe, you know, we're not seeing, you know, it goes back to the edit. Maybe we're not seeing them actually like try to work with them or whatever else. But like, from my perspective, I'm like, wait, that's the other alliance. They're not in the middle. They're like against you.
Yeah. What I want, and maybe you and the Survivor fan base can help make this happen. I want a season of Survivor, after it's done, publish the notes, publish the pre-production and post-production notes on the season. Show me every timeline. And don't, you can edit out, you know, trade secret type of crap that's like not important or not worthy of adding. But like, I would love to know the full timeline of like, these conversations all happened, but they got, that branch got snipped because it never made it. Like, you're going to have an insane, like, we can't have live feeds of Survivor. Like, right. We can't ask for live feeds. But like, a season like that of like, here are the notes from the season. Oh my God, that would be insane.
It would be, there would be so many. Oh my God. I feel like I would be sitting and reading and watching or whatever it is, like just like soaking it all in and being like, that happened. That's crazy.
They could do that. So like, say the day after the finale, they publish the notes as like a 3 terabyte file. The fan base would devour it all summer, all the way till the next season.
Literally. There are, yes, Flaria said, I'd pay for that. Paramount is leaving so much money on the table.
Right.
Literally. You know, one thing that we haven't talked about with this episode yet that I would love to get your opinion on is Jeff Probst competing in the challenge. How did you feel about that whole moment and that clip?
So Jeff Probst is reminding me of Homelander from The Boys, which I don't know if anybody watches The Boys, but Homelander wants to be the star of everything. And everybody's like, dude, you're not the star. And it's kind of like a Jeff thing where he's like, he keeps trying to have these celebrity things. And then he jumps into a challenge. He lost, like, and he's like, oh my God, this is so much harder. And it's like, yeah, dude, like it is really tough. Like it hurts you for days after. So like a lot of the challenges. So it was actually really nice for him to get that and feel that, honestly, in a way that I don't think he ever would have felt, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm on a season in the future, if anybody's on a season, they can always be like, if he's talking trash during something, we're like, remember that time with the challenge, Jeff? Remember that time, you know?
Do you remember? I thought this was really...
You miss at him, like, Jeff.
Oh my gosh. Bullying Jeff Probst back. I love it.
Well, someone loves Homelander. Oh my God. Like in an ironic way, like he's a great character, you love Homelander, or you're like, protect the home front Homelander.
Oh God. Oh man. I hope it's the first. Yeah. I think that Jeff doing this challenge is so I don't know. I think that this was a very silly moment. And sometimes I do like silly moments on Survivor. I really was like grinning ear to ear. I think that like it did make me smile. Was it a little cheesy? Was it a little ridiculous? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, but I like cheese and I like, like sometimes it's like, yes, this is a little dumb, but hey, I'm getting enjoyment out of it. And I much prefer this rice negotiation to just the regular rice negotiation. Like if the rice negotiation is going to stay, give me this incarnation of it every single time.
That's true, because he actually may perform better in a different thing. For some reason, he just, you know, he didn't beat anybody, but he didn't beat also the insane firefighter who won the whole thing, like outlasted literally everybody, you know?
Yeah. Watching Joe do this challenge is crazy because we see everybody struggling and Joe's just there with one hand and like leaning back and like scratching his head and whatever else. And he's I could do this all day. That was, I mean, seeing Jonathan struggle and Joe just be like, psh, I'm good. Yep. Psh, I'm like, man, that guy is strong. But yeah, you're right. I think that there are things that Jeff could outlast people. One thing that was, I didn't realize when I was watching it the first time, I think I misunderstood. When he was giving the rules, I thought he said that he had to outlast anybody but one.
Yeah.
Basically, if one of the people that they chose dropped, Jeff wins.
I thought that too. It's confusing.
It was confusing. So like the reason why it was better to do four people was because then they didn't had less variables. It took me a second to like get it. I literally rewatched it immediately after the episode. And I went, oh, okay. So like, again, if you choose the wrong people, you lose the rice. Like, I think it's kind of interesting. And I think it's way better because everyone can still compete for immunity. I don't love the like, having to take yourself out. Now, if there's food on the line, I think that's interesting. But just doing it for like rice later, I find less interesting.
Daryl in the comments made a good point that Jonathan was carrying by far the most weight. And that is a consideration because people do bulk up before. Some people do bulk up before the show and some are basically the same weight out there. You know, there's no difference. So that is a good point that he potentially had more. So he wasn't doing worse at it. He just had a higher, you know, there's a higher threshold of how much weight he had lost.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Would you want to see this again in a future season or do you think one and done is good for the Jeff doing
it? I actually, as much as I'm razzing Jeff about being Homelander in the center, I do agree. I think you've won me over with that argument. That's better than sometimes the debate over stuff. And if he's playing a challenge and Jeff is like struggling, they could still debate him. You know, it could be a live situation where you're like, Jeff, if you drop out, you know, we can get the rice. We'll get the rice or we'll trade off this for that or whatever. If I drop out and he drops out, will you quit so we can get the rice? You know, maybe there's more levels to it. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I would rather Jeff, like, this to me is more interesting than, like, also Jeff saying, like, look how hard Survivor is. This is I think, better because it was a show me, not tell me situation. And yeah, he was saying it was hard, but it's more interesting, I think, to see him do it and be like, oh, yeah, this is difficult, than just be like, man, it's hard out here. Look how hard Survivor is, which we're like, we know. Like, we're not watching this because it's a walk in the park. You know what I mean?
Right. I do agree.
Now, okay, let's talk a little bit about the episode coming up. And we can always, if we have any thoughts and we want to go back, we can absolutely do that. But the episode coming up.
I haven't seen the preview, by the way. Like, I was going to stay up and watch preview. I missed it. So tell me everything. You know?
Okay. So we have the synopsis here. And wait, before I read the synopsis, I have a bone to pick with whoever makes these synopses. I'm going to read last week's synopsis because I screenshot them whenever I read them, or I usually do. Okay, here we go. Last week's synopsis is, after losing two alliance members, castaways spend the next day picking up the pieces of the broken alliance. The castaways face off against a surprise challenger during this week's individual immunity competition. Then, upon their return to camp, the journey participant must read aloud an important announcement regarding their recent adventure.
Oh my God, what a spoiler.
And we didn't even know it was a spoiler because we didn't even know that, like, the moment Christian goes, if I lose, I have to read this. I didn't tell anybody I was watching with because they didn't read this, but I was seething. I was sitting in my chair seething because I was like, you did not have to say that. You could say one person goes on a journey, period, end of story. You didn't have to say anything.
I would say written by AI, but these kind of summaries have happened before AI. I've seen, 10 years ago, a summary when the very first day of, Netflix or whatever, and the summary for a reality show gives some crap away. And I'm like,
what? Like, I know that you have to do this to, like, make people interested to watch, like, who aren't watching the show, I guess. But, like, literally, there's a way you can say that without giving away so, like, it was so much. And then afterwards, I paused what we were watching the episode, and I said, so I didn't tell you guys this, but I knew that was going to happen. And not because I have good intuition or I'm smart. Yep. It's because of, and I read it to them and they were all like, that was crazy. It's yeah, crummy. I got so mad. So let's hope this doesn't happen this time. I've read this already. I don't think it gives anything
away. Well, just don't, ahead of time, don't look at the DVD cover for 50. Okay.
Literally. Oh my God, the DVD cover. I'm dead. One castaway comes clean to the tribe about a previously deceptive move. The crowd favorite Survivor auction returns with an extra special season 50 spin. Chaos ensues when social media icon Mr. Beast arrives on the scene.
Oh my God.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge, they also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Krueger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshals Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
All right. So what do you think is going to happen with Mr. Beast?
I mean, a lot of people online are going to be like, Mr. Beast sucks. I'm going to hear about whatever that sexual misconduct thing is that happened with him. I'm not really sure what it is, but I'm aware of it now. I did not know who Mr. Beast was until he entered the Survivor domain, by the way. And people are like, are you insane? He's you know, has all these followers or whatever. But when Mr. Beast comes, I kind of know what's going to happen. Everybody's going to freak out and be like, oh my God. And if you're not freaking out, they're not going to show you.
Yeah.
In the clip, Mr. Beast is all about this. From what I've understood, Mr. Beast is all about this like high drama, like high risk, high reward kind of thing. So some people are going to get nothing from this auction. I think they're going to give a lot of people crazy stuff. Like they might do something like a car, mm-hmm. you know, or some other kind of weird prize that they don't normally give. They're going to go extra special with it. There's going to be a twist. There's going to be some kind of nutso twist, you know, off of the notepad in Jeff's house. So expect that.
I think that the, you know, Mr. Beast, when the preview of season 50 happened at season 49, like during season 49.
Yeah.
Everyone was nervous. Oh my God, it's Mr. Beast. But in the clip, when he brought out the thing, I was like, oh, he's going to be there for the auction. I don't think this is going to be as bad as maybe the others. Cause the others, I think, were a little more like unknown. And I was like, Mr. Beast gives stuff away. Like this is his deal is like, he gives away cars. He gives away money. He like, whatever. That's like one of the things that he does. And I think that what the people, I don't watch Beast games. But what people who watch Beast games have said, there is this coin in Beast games where you flip it. And if it lands on heads, let's say, I think they like get money or something. Or maybe they double it. Like a lot of people think it's going to like double the pot if it lands on heads. So instead of you winning $1 million, it'll be $2 million, but maybe like it could also be like an individual person gets like $100,000 or something else. But in Beast games, if it lands on tails, let's just say, then you're out. Then like it's an immediate, like you're gone from the game. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I kept saying that before we knew of the Beast coin thing, everyone was like, oh, Mr. Beast is going to offer somebody $250,000 to just leave the game. And I was like, no, they're not going to want to do that on season 50 because Jeff wants everyone to give everybody their all, like put everything on the line, do everything. Like quitting for money is not everything.
Right.
So I was like, that would never happen. But now that it's a coin flip, I could potentially see tails being you're out of the game.
Yeah. I could too.
But I could also see tails being you lose your vote or something. Like I could also see it being like a negative in the sense that like, you know, your game's not over. But if it is a 50-50 to get out of the game, we will never hear the end of it.
No, it'll be worse than what happened to Christian.
It'll be worse. And it'll be from me. I mean, we as a collective, because I will also be talking about it because that would be terrible.
Someone said, this is funny. Mr. Beast, this comment will ensure Suri goes home without getting a vote again. Yeah.
Oh my God. No. Don't will that into existence.
Here's the problem with Mr. Beast and with twists that are strange and stuff. And I think I actually talked to Christian about this when I talked to him briefly when I played an online game with him. It's skill versus luck. And if somebody leaves because of bad luck, it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So like Mr. Beast, you know, you flip a coin and you're out, like.
Yeah.
Dumb. That's like you save a bunch of money to buy a house and then the house
gets like struck by multiple bolts of lightning at the same time. And people are like, you're such a loser because you didn't buy a house. And it's like, I had no choice. The house exploded, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there is, I really hope that that's not the case. I mean, there have been some bad twists in the sense that you know, the do or die twist that was in what, season 41 and 42, nobody left because of that. But if somebody had left because of the do or die twist, it would have been a very, very, very horrible thing, but it's kind of a non-entity because two people did the Monty Hall Python incorrectly both times. And yet it ended up working in their favor both times. But I really hope, I'm really, you know, I try to be an optimist and I am unfortunately an optimist. I really think that it'll be like a loss of a vote, but I will say somebody said in here, which is true. Episode 10 is a 2-hour episode. So we could be seeing a double boot here. So, you know, somebody goes out because of the flip and also somebody gets voted out.
Somebody just said too, quote, Cole said, quote, super beware advantage, quote, is what it was called in the next week preview. So super beware advantage means death.
Yeah.
You know, death in the game, in my opinion. So I think that actually is sadly, I'm an optimist too. Okay. I'm totally an optimist. Like I'm going to watch Survivor till it's off the air. I love the show. I love the game. I can still love something and critique the hell out of it if it doesn't fit, you know, the mold of like what the like core values, I guess, of the show are. So in that way, I'm more of a purist. Like you should not have a super beware advantage for amazing game players. Like what if Rizzo goes out from the super beware advantage? Like he'll never know how far he could have flown, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This is, super rare advantage makes it think that something is really bad.
Yeah.
And it's also because Mr. Beast comes, in the preview, we saw that Mr. Beast walks out at Tribal Council with the case again. So it leads me to believe that somebody buys it. And then also they will then flip the coin at Tribal Council. Yeah.
Yeah, this is why I come on this show. This is why I was like, yes, absolutely come on the show with her. You're more in tune with all the information in the Survivor sphere that I'm not privy to. I have like a little, like I have a window into it, but you're like, you're covering this stuff, which is great. I actually came here for information.
I love that. Well, I'm happy to help. Well, speaking of that, there were some previews for this episode, some sneak peeks for this episode. We get a confessional from Emily Flippin saying, oh man, that was bad. That was not good. And apparently this is the first time she has ever voted incorrectly.
Oh.
Which I find interesting. First time in her Survivor career. I mean, I'm guessing except for the time that she goes home. But this is, I think that's a very interesting thing. And she goes, I have to make some amends. And so she goes and she talks to Ozzy and she's like, I felt like I was stuck between a rock and a hard place and I had to choose between either you or Christian. And I chose wrong. I chose Christian. And Ozzy goes, yeah, you chose wrong. I had your back from, you know, day one. So it seems like maybe Emily and Ozzy are no more. I want to say, very funny thing. I'm on against my better judgment, I'm on Facebook, Survivor stuff. And I keep seeing this horrible AI photo of Ozzy and Emily like kissing in their beach outfits, holding up like heart hands like this under an announcement that says that they're engaged or something when Emily is full on married.
Right.
It's the most AI you've ever, like, it's such an AI photo. I've seen it 4 or 5 times.
Someone posted it on Reddit too.
I
saw it on Reddit too. It made its way to Reddit. I'm not on Facebook at all because there's so much garbage. Smart. And stuff.
Smart. You're very smart for that. It's horrible over there.
I honestly, I do not like that Instagram got bought by Facebook even. Like, I would like Instagram to, like, cut off, but it's same. That ain't happening anytime soon with this administration. So they're together.
They are. Yeah. Facebook is a terrible place with crazy opinions, which are it's kind of fun to, like, be there and be like, oh yeah, every single opinion is had. If there's an opinion to be had about something, somebody has that opinion. The amount of people that don't like Suri on Facebook is concerning.
Yes.
And I'm like, do you like Survivor? Like, what? You don't like Suri? I can't even fathom that. That's so
I've talked to some people.
I've talked to some people or I've seen conversations and they'll randomly just be like, they're like, it's like a default setting for them of like, she's a snake. And I'm like, how can you say Sari is a snake? Yeah, she's a game player, but like a snake, like,
you know. That's crazy. That's I mean, if there's an opinion to be had, somebody has it. Somebody has it. Yeah. But so I think that this Emily and Ozzy relationship is going to be very interesting going forward. And I don't know. So Ozzy said a different person is playing in the past. When somebody blindsides him, he's mad. If somebody goes against him, he's mad.
Yes.
If Oscar is in fact playing this season, we may see them link back up again, but I don't think it'll happen. Do you think they'll link back up?
I mean, Ozzy's a pretty, like, he's in a rut. Like, he plays as he plays. He's just, he's not as flexible in terms of that mm-hmm. social, like, if something happens strategically with him, it affects social for him. And it doesn't, they can't be decoupled, you know?
Got it.
So I just don't see it. Yeah. And especially that late in the game, you know?
Yeah. And also the fact that I don't think that Sari necessarily wants to work with Emily. You know, she was one of the people who wanted to go for Emily. Tiffany wanted to go for Emily. I think that Emily is going to be, it's going to be an uphill battle for Emily. Another secret scene we saw is of Rick Devins, or not secret scene, a sneak preview of Rick Devins. Yeah. Everyone being like, oh, so the idol's fake. And Rick's like, I just didn't want to play it, blah, 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 blah. But Rick and Emily have a conversation where Rick's like, well, it looks like we're going. So we're playing with house money now. Let's just do some crazy stuff. And Rick says,
I did see that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. Isn't that an interesting, like, he's like, you know what? I'm either here to make a big game move that helps me or just make a big game move because it's fun. I love the way this man approaches Survivor.
Yes.
Because Rick, I think that he does have great moments because of it.
I talked to, so this is a like behind the curtain in some ways. I talked to Rick at, I think, the Hearts of Reality charity event in Florida. It's now called something else, Celebrity Weekend. But I talked to Rick Devins like the last time I was down there in like 2019 or something like that. And he was kind of fresh off his show. Honestly, I don't know the years. Forget the years. I just talked to Rick Devins. And he said, I talked to him and I'm like, you kind of were like a second time player in your first season because you played the game kind of conservatively and then you were voted off and then you got to come back into the game and you were like no hold bar, like go nuts, go ape. And you did fantastic because you had more confidence. And so he kind of got transformed into a two-time player on his first season. He said, that's absolutely right. And he said, I played with so much more confidence and like gusto when I knew that like you already got voted off, you already got killed, like there's nothing to lose. So Rick Devins is his best form in this, like there's nothing to lose and he goes all out and he actually does really well. So I'm excited for that too.
I'm really excited for it. And I'm excited because I'm excited to see him and Emily like you know, burn it down, like they're ready to go. I think it's going to be a really interesting episode. The fact that it's 2 hours, maybe it's because we get two boots. I mean, we still have what? We have 10 people left in the game. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get rid of four or five people two episodes.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. I think that math is wrong there. So I think the fact that because we have to get rid of multiple people, I'm assuming the finale is we'll have six people in the finale. That'll be episode 13. So in 10, 11, and 12, I think we need to get rid of four people is what I'm thinking.
This will be two then. I would imagine this one would be two.
Yeah. So this is going to be fascinating. And you know, sometimes we do see when an alliance gets blindsided, they then are, you know, not thought of as a target as, you know, because they're, you know, hey, you know, they'll be fine, whatever, you know, Stephanie, Joe and Jonathan, they weren't really thought of as targets. They were thought of as numbers instead going into episode nine. I think this is going to be different though, because I think that Devin scares people. I think that do you remember on premiere episode? Somebody even said like, oh, I bet you there's an idol under Devin's feet when they were like all lined up.
Yeah.
I think he gives people like a little bit of unease because he's willing to play with like the like devil may care. Like, let's go.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I think we're going to see some really fun stuff from him.
It's to me, the show is boring
when it's like cookie cutter, like this alliance is in charge and the people on the bottom or the middle, they kind of scramble around, but they're really ineffective or they don't pull the trigger. Yeah, I love Devin's mentality, devil may care instincts for sure. I think that's a really boring show. And I think in the past, I mean, actually not in the past, in the present, Survivor producers try to like shake it up with a twist. Like people have to be forced to take action. But really it's about the cast. It's about like the positioning of people. And then they realize I'm so desperate, I have to do something wild and crazy. And then they do something. And then you authentically will make Survivor history by doing like a crazy wild thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really kind of been rare because we see a lot of this like force advantages to force those moments instead of them naturally happening.
I mean, you see that even with how they designed the idols during all of the new era. They designed idols to be look like fakes because they wanted people to fake idols.
Right. Get those moments. Yeah.
Exactly. Great question. I mean, this is not really a question, but it's a good thought here. Devin's needs to find Aubrey's idol. You know, they were planted that. Do you think that there's an idol that is out there? Because bad guy thinks that they won't plant more idols unless Rizzo or Ozzy plays them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot out there. They're kind of running into the territory if they might have like a Suri, you know, game changer situation, if they keep pumping more in. You know, Devin's may already have found one. And they're waiting to play the clip until the next episode too. Mm-hmm. Like we kind of had their own little narrative on the last episode. Like how nice would it be if the very first couple seconds of this next episode, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, Devin's already found an idol. He found Aubrey's idol, you know, 2 days ago in real world time, but we're putting it in this episode.
They do like to play it with that.
Yeah. They've done that before. So, I mean, that could be the case. I was actually surprised why there wasn't more conversation about Devin's and his idol on the episode we just watched. I thought there would have been a lot more commotion on this episode about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems the moment Christian brought up Ozzy's name.
Yeah.
Nobody cared about Rick Devin's anymore.
Yeah. Based on the editing, which they could like I said, they could have had a whole side conversation about Devin's, but.
Yes, absolutely. I think that this is going to be an interesting episode. I think this episode will expose a lot. I mean, every episode exposes a lot, but I think this episode in particular will expose, I think that Suri now, I mean, Emily and Devin's realize that Suri's not actually with them, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to have to move with that. There was also a preview with Aubrey, but I cannot remember what Aubrey said. Ugh, and it's killing me because there three previews is a lot. Usually they do two. The last time they did three was, I think, for the duo twist or something. So I think there's a lot brewing here, yeah. I think, for episode 10. Who are you most worried for going into episode 10?
I mean,
other than the fans because of Mr. Beast.
That's really what it is. Worried for. It's so unpredictable, unfortunately. Like, I mean, that core three of Ozzy and Suri and Rizzo, I feel like they're never going to move. Like they're never, I could see them easily in the finals, like go all the way. I do think Devin's is on the radar. So he could try a bunch of crazy stuff and this could be his, you know, swan song, like his episode, he leaves, you know? So I guess I'm a little worried about Devin's. Emily, I'm not worried as much about, honestly.
Okay. Do you think that people aren't as worried for Emily? Like, she flips and she says stuff, but she's not as unpredictable as Rick Devin's.
She's like, I do agree. Yeah. I think they see Devin's as a threat and he's already shown like he is like, he's making plays and he's talking about idols and fake idols and that kind of stuff. So I think he's way on the radar. So he basically he's at risk until he's not at risk, I think.
Right. So I had an idea while you were talking. Because you were saying how, you know, Devin's is dangerous. And we were talking about idols and whatever else. And it made me think this super beware advantage.
Yes.
He's essentially saying, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Yes.
It seems as if the super beware advantage can be bid on at the auction.
So you might go for it.
What if Devin's goes for it? Because he's like, I literally have nothing to lose. So I'm going home no matter what. Super beware advantage, give it to me.
Historically, that tracks. I think almost every auction, somebody goes into it with a confessional or a couple things in a row leading up to it saying, I'm at
a threat. I have to do something to save myself in the game. They save all their money. They ignore the food. They try to get the thing, you know, the advantage or whatever it is. So yeah, absolutely. That could be the situation.
That I feel like that feels right to me, because again, I think he's literally like, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. I'm here with playing with house money. Y'all are going to come after me no matter what. And here we go. Let's do this thing.
I'm trying to think, they don't let you trade money, which we actually discussed that on our various seasons of like, can we give money to one person to overpower somebody else, like outbid someone beyond what's possible? Because at some point, two people could bid literally all their money at the same time for the same object. You know, it just happens to be who gets there first. Let's give Cochran, you know, I'll give Cochran 50 of my dollars to boost him over the line if an advantage comes up, because this alliance is unified against this one person who absolutely cannot get an advantage. But they poo-pooed that. They said, you can't do that. So then you have to kind of, you know, figure out who is going to pay for it and who does really want food. And I always said, F you guys, I'm getting food no matter what. I don't care. And they'd be like, we respect that.
I know. I was actually rewatching auctions because I made a video about a majority of the people on the season have never been to an auction. The it's only sad. People that have been to auctions are Stephanie, Suri, Ozzy, and Emily. Wow. Aubrey and Devins have not, and the other New Era people, Jonathan, Joe, Tiffany, and Rizzo have not been to an auction. So this is a lot of people's first auction.
It's so fun. Like everybody loves the auction, and it's such a great like deal or no deal kind of vibe. Like it's a different vibe for a challenge. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the choice was to ever take it away, to be honest.
Yeah. They said that people in one world, I always say one world when I mean worlds apart. And then when I mean one world, I say worlds apart. In worlds apart, they gamified it. They're like, oh, you know, no one's bidding on everything. They're just saving their money. I was like, okay, take away. This is so easy to fix. Just don't have advantages, or make the advantages hidden.
Yeah.
Don't tell them that's an advantage and put an advantage under a thing. And sorry, that's what's like. I feel like it's so easy to fix. The way they fixed it with this like extra money hidden in the jungle, and some people have $0 and some people have like $7,000. Just start everyone with the $500 that it always is, and just hide the advantages.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not literally not rocket science. Not a rocket science. Like I came up with that in like 25 seconds. Like it's not that difficult.
Jeff said he doesn't read the comments anymore. So no, it won't, we won't, we need to mail it to him or something like that.
Right. I need to write an essay, double spaced MLA format or whatever it is. Why the auction needs to be back how it used to be.
And then like publish it on like Medium or something.
Yeah, literally. I don't hate the way, like literally the way they do it is not terrible. I would rather have an auction than no auction. Same. But like, it's what happens. Oh, that's another part of this. Are we going to do the person with the most amount of money? Do you think they're going to have like the most person with the most amount of money loses their vote? Cause that's how the last two auctions were.
Oh yeah. They may. Cause
Bruce lost his vote, and who lost their vote in 47? I can't remember.
Someone did.
Because what happens is I think that makes the auction uninteresting, because then every single person, they pay $700 for a milkshake so that they have no money, so they don't lose their vote.
I didn't like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that.
You're a fan of the OG auction.
Yeah.
Remind me, did you get to do an auction on Caramoan?
Yes. Okay. Not as good as my first auction, but everybody got peanut butter at the end. Like they gave us a huge thing of peanut butter.
The chocolate cake is, you're part of some of the most iconic moments of Survivor history.
It's kind of nuts, to be honest. Like, as time has gone on, and everybody that was on that season with me, like Micronesia, and there are a lot on Caramoan that were cool too, but like Micronesia was just nuts. Like, sharing the same space as like Penner and stuff, and then Suri and Parvati and Amanda and all that they have gone on to do. Like, it honestly doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. I was telling Todd and Leslie on their podcast that they're like, what was it like day one? Yeah. I say, what was it like day one on the beach? Like when you see Parvati and Serene, everybody come out. And I'm like, they weren't who they are today when they walked out. So in a way it was like day one of Google, Like, nobody knows what Google was going to be. And that's what it was like. It was like, we don't really know who these people are. And then by the end of the season, it was like, legends have been created, which is nuts.
Yeah, it's such a good season. And, you know, it's interesting. Your clip is like on every single season. Do you get paid for that? Yeah. Like, do you get paid for every single time your clip is on Survivor?
No, not at all. Because you signed the big contract, you know, they own your image. I would love to do, and this is a whole different conversation, but the NCAA didn't used to play players for their stuff. Okay. In college, I believe this is college. Mm-hmm. They went all the way to the Supreme Court to say, you know, this is wrong. You know, the NCAA is making tons of money off of these people and their talents. I think there's a case to be made that all reality TV people could have a case like this where they're like, you are basically exploiting, they're not actors, but they're also not interesting, wonderful, incredible, creative people. Like, I think there could totally be a class action in the future for reality TV people in the same realm as the NCAA type of stuff.
I think you're totally right.
But no, I don't get paid for any of that stuff. What I do get, which is nice, is every once in a while, Paramount or CBS will put one of my clips out there and I'll beg them in the comments. I'll say, please add me as a contributor. And then they will. And you will make some residual money from that, from Instagram, Facebook, you know, follows and stuff.
Oh, okay. That's great. Cause I mean, you know, we saw it on season 50. Saree was talking about it, the idol. And I think it would probably happen. I think it's happened, like, when they can use it, they do.
They do. Yeah.
I think that you've probably been on more seasons than most people who've played Survivor. You've been on more seasons than Boston Rob.
Like that clip. Yeah. Cause it made it Australian Survivor someone, cause Parvati went over there. Basically wherever Parvati and Saree go or anybody from that season, that clip kind of shows up.
Yeah, it's just, and I think that there are also people will like mention it like, you know, every now and then. And I think, again, when they can use the clip, they do. It's just fascinating. When I saw it, I was like that Leonardo DiCaprio. I was like, oh, there he is.
Yeah, exactly that meme.
Very exactly. Funny. Well, so Eric, I feel like, do you have a winner pick for the season? Like, do you have somebody that you are like rooting for or somebody that you picked preseason that you really want to see, you know, take this thing home?
I'm terrible with picks and it's because of the variables, but Emily was my pick and
she was one of mine.
My pick with people are saying Aubrey now, they're like Aubrey definitely wins. And I'm like, she might. I don't know. That really, the Emily win seems less likely by the day as Rizzo, Saree, and Ozzy march to the finish line. And they have all these advantages, and Saree has all this sway. Unless they completely self-destruct, you know, Rizzo versus Saree, I don't see an Emily win on the books. But Emily's my most likely pick because I can't explain otherwise how someone gets this far in the game without making massive moves and also telling lies, like outing lies to so many different people at the same time.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, Emily, so I'm bad at choosing winner picks. So I chose multiple for season 50 because I don't like to follow rules. Rules are dumb, especially for silly things like choosing your winner pick. Emily was one of them. Because I watched in the preview, she wasn't in the preview after season 49 at all. And I did some research in previous previews, winners had not been in it at all. Like 25 or 30% of the time, which is more than, you know, whatever else. So that's what I based it on. And I think that though it's looking slightly more unlikely, like, as you said, like as the day goes on, mainly because, you know, unless she says, hey, this is the first time I've ever been on the wrong side of the vote, I'm going to be perfect from here on out. I mean, we've heard her side of the story for almost everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. The Aubrey thing, I don't see a winning game yet.
Yeah.
Everyone's saying Aubrey, I don't see a winning game yet. And maybe this is one of those things where they say why somebody lost and less so why somebody won. Yeah. I could potentially see that. But like right now I'm like, she's playing fine. She's not playing bad.
Yeah.
But she's not doing it's not pulling me in. It would be crazy if Saree didn't win. The edit she's getting.
Yeah.
It would be crazy.
I just, everybody loves her. They all think she's on their side, you know?
Yeah.
I'm reading the comments here. Yeah.
This is an interesting idea.
Yeah, go ahead.
If everyone knows Emily's a flip-flopper with a big mouth, she makes a perfect goat to sit with at the end. Yeah. I don't hate that thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Eric.
Someone said war is coming, you know? If it really comes down to if I could see her, I could see Aubrey have a Cochrane type win, like Cochrane and Karamoan. If Aubrey is sitting next to Rizzo and Rizzo backstabs Ceri, because then Ceri's on the jury and Ceri, you know, Ponderosa is not, you're sequestered and nobody talks. Like everybody talks, you know. I could see a Rizzo, like a broken Rizzo at the final next to Aubrey or Emily or somebody, and Aubrey or Emily get it because Rizzo has broken something that he should not have broken.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Do we think Rizzo can win? Like, say it's final four and say fire making is still in place. Do we think Rizzo can win in fire making?
No.
Like, I think that's also the key here. Like, I don't know that Rizzo goes to final three because he only had what, 9 days in between?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think
he's the same.
He's the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that we saw it with Amanda, you know, basically doing the same thing twice in a row. We saw it with Russell basically doing the same thing twice in a row. And I think we're seeing with Rizzo, and I don't think that Rizzo's playing a bad game, but I think I could see a world in which he goes to final four and loses fire again.
Yeah. The one nice thing about waiting some time and then playing is you get some awareness. Like you were saying, that self-awareness. Rizzo's self-awareness is huge. Like he has great self-awareness. I don't think he doesn't, but there's a different kind of awareness playing and losing and seeing on TV, the breakdown of like how it happened. So,
Yeah. I think it'll be very interesting coming up. So, Eric, we have one other task that we need to make sure that we do today before I can let you go. And it is crowning our Alley-Oop winner, which is the most coveted award every single week. Everyone wants to know who won Alley-Oop. No one's ever asked me that. So Alley-Oop, for those of you who are new, the Alley-Oop award is who we think is setting themselves up best for the next episode. I think this week is a hard one because I think that there's a lot of unknowns going into this episode that I feel like I haven't really felt a lot of this season. And so I think this is a difficult task that we are faced with right now. So do you have an instinct of who you think is setting themselves up really well for episode 10?
God.
Like, I didn't see any particular like crazy move that is like, wow, they really set themselves up well. I think it's just people continuing on with the same.
Yeah. There wasn't any big moment where it was like, this person took a step up. It basically was like everything's in place and then Christian sank like a stone.
Yeah. I think that there are people who like, I think Emily is worse off here. I think Rick Devins is maybe better off because he maybe has a new lease on life and we're going to see crazy Devins. But like, the only argument I have is like maybe Jonathan because of this Jonathan Aubrey connection, like he didn't really have a connection to the other side. And also Ceri told Jonathan that Jonathan was one of the names that Christian brought up. And so clearly there's some kind of working relationship there. So maybe like my only thought I have is like maybe Jonathan.
I'm fine with Jonathan, but it's not as clear. Like the episode before, Rick Devins was clearly the alley-oop. If I believe you must have done the alley-oop for Rick Devins, I would think the last one where he brought that random idol out. I think so.
I honestly can't remember, but I think so. That's how much this is. I mean, there's no obvious move here. There's no obvious who I think won the alley-oop that week? I think it was maybe Aubrey because she didn't have to do the idol, but she was connected to the idol anyway. Devins. Maybe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, with this one, it's hard. And again, here's the other thing. Jonathan, I don't know if he's necessarily set up the best. I think he's maybe the most improved player.
Yeah.
And less so like the person who is, I think that he is definitely improving day after day. Maybe it's just like the easy answer is Ceri, and maybe it is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's an easy answer because maybe that's just the right answer.
I mean, she's so solid already. Like, she's so in place. Daryl said, I'll give the award to Rizzo because he insisted on getting Christian out over Emily. And that did happen. So Rizzo basically has higher, you know, his voice is not ignored by Suri or any other person. It's actually seen as, let's do that.
I think that's a great answer too. I think this one is a hard one.
Yeah.
It's harder than any other week, I think.
I just think like the episode was pretty, this is the lay of the land. Christian just sank. Yeah. He just sank.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know what, this week, the Alley-Oop Award winner will go to whomever the listener wants it to go to. So if you have one in your heart that you want to win this Alley-Oop, let me know in the comments who you think should have won the Alley-Oop. I just think this one is a difficult one this week, but I like the Rizzo idea. Jonathan, I think is okay. Suri's the easy answer. But I think that there are two losers, and that's Emily and Devins.
What if it is Aubrey for setting up that conversation, you know, with Jonathan? You know, what if that, like, we're not talking about who got a fishy, like who did the most amazing thing ever. We're talking about who's setting themselves up to level up. It might be Aubrey, you know?
I really like that answer too. Cause I think, I mean, that conversation goes two ways, Jonathan and Aubrey. And I do think that Aubrey probably initiated it. So I think Aubrey's a great answer. You know what? Let's say it. Aubrey. Oh, bad guy says Aubrey.
I think I misinterpreted it. Like you said this, and then I thought about an alley-oop is like, you're not making a basket. Like you're getting ready to make a basket. So I think Aubrey would fit that qualifier.
Amazing. Amazing. Aubrey it isn't. Congratulations, Aubrey. You're the alley-oop winner this week. Eric, do you have anything before I let you go? Anything that you want to plug, say, where can people find you? Are you still selling your book? Can people buy your book?
So it's complicated. I was writing a memoir. It was a comic book. It's done. It's 200 pages. I don't know if I can actually publish it or not. So I'm kind of waiting on it, but it's not out there. I do have one book out there, which is just a collection of my Survivor comics. It's from 2013 to 2022. It's like 200 pages long. It's just comics from watching Survivor and drawing them. And I'm working on volume 2 now, which is going to be done at the end of this season. This is the last season I'm doing, and then I'm going to publish a volume 2. But that memoir is off. It's literally just sitting in a file folder, and I'm just like debating, should I, can I? I don't know.
Interesting.
And I've been watching other people write books because, you know, Stephen Fishbach has his book, but it's fictional. You know, it's not Survivor, even though it's kind of like Survivor. And then there's Parvati wrote a memoir, a book. Well, I guess it's not a, she didn't call it a memoir. She called it something else. Keturah is apparently writing something too. Keturah from that season is writing something. And then Rob wrote something. So there's all kinds of Survivor books. I think Tina just wrote something too. Tina Wesson?
Oh my gosh.
Sandra, there's a lot of
we are being fed. I love that.
Yeah, but I'm watching it. And I'm like, do I go into this place yet? But I don't know. It's done. It's all ready to go. I just have to decide when.
Amazing, amazing. And people can find you at your mostly post on Instagram or where else?
Yeah, mostly Instagram. I just started using TikTok again, and people seem to like that. And then I'm always on Reddit. I literally am always on Reddit because there's trolls and there's people that like me on there. It's everything that I find that you would find on Facebook, but on Reddit, and it's wonderful.
I love that. Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about the episode with me. It has been so much fun. And like I said, you know, you're such an icon and one of my faves and somebody that when I watched you, I was like, oh, that's like me. That's like me up there. So it has been such a blast chatting with you. And thank you all so much for listening. I will be back here again next week. Tentatively, Rachel should be on next week, nice. Which will be a lot of fun. I talked to her last season and she's a great chat. And you know, hopefully there's a lot of craziness to talk about with episode 10, but thank you all so much for listening. And I will see you again next week. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.
Bye.